Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore. Positive. We are calm here amidst the 90-degree days of summer, and we're very, very local. And Don Moeller and I are, passing time here during the pandemic. I should have brought him some Taharka down to the Eastern Shore this week, but I was fresh out of Honey Graham. I got to get with my friends, go see Sean and all my friends over at Taharka. They're doing local ice cream and social change. I encourage you to order yourself some Taharka ice cream and get it delivered to yourself sometime here this summer. Also encourage everyone to order those Faintly's crab cakes for the 4th of July. I am wearing the red, white, and blue shirt that I had on in the infamous crab video now being shared again on Facebook this week. We would love to share the Faintly's love and the crab cakes. You can deliver those crab cakes to yourself, and you can be a hero, and you can ship them to somebody else. World-famous lump crab cake recipe at Faintly's. Damie Hahn's going to join us this week to talk about the future of the Maryland crabbing industry. A lot of things going on here in the Chesapeake Bay. We'll talk more about that. Also, Evan Brown going to be joining us this week from State Fair. I will be joining him for some shrimp and grits this weekend because my wife's going to be in the mood for a holiday Bloody Mary this weekend. So we're going to get over to Frederick Road. We are just moments away from opening El Guapo across the street in Frederick Road. I have warned Don Moeller I'm going to get the first nacho and guacamole and a mouthful of salsa over there at El Guapo. We're going to have Evan Brown on this week talking about that. And Don, I know I'm going to give you a little oxygen. First off, today's guest is a great friend of yours and trying to create change in Baltimore County. I have former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller here. First off, Moeller and Gary Realty, before we get to our guest, I know you're very, very proud because Jeff's closing deals despite masks and 6 feet and all this stuff, right?
Nestor, I'm fascinated, and I just read an article in the Sun paper the other day reporting that the market is about as hot as it's ever been. I've commented to Jeff throughout this pandemic, it's been amazing to me that I've never seen him busier. So it's a great time to buy and sell. If you're thinking of moving some real estate, give Jeff a call, 410-746-1547. It is a pleasure to welcome two-term Baltimore County Councilman Julian Jones, represents Baltimore County out in the northwest area of the county, the Liberty Road corridor, does a great job for his constituents out there, always fighting for the folks. Lots of issues going on. Julian, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Don Aparicio, listen, I really appreciate you guys giving me an opportunity to be on the show. I'm a big fan, appreciate the work you guys are doing. And Don, as you know, I've always appreciated everything you've been doing in your service to the community and to Baltimore County for many, many years. So I'm just honored to be here.
Well, thank you. Julian, you know, I can't have you on, and we'll get to the specific issues in Baltimore County and police reform. You're working with the county executive. You're working to be a real leader on that issue. You're going to put something in front of the council. We're going to give you plenty of time to talk about that. But as opposed to a lot of other folks, we rarely talk national politics on here, but I'm not having Julian Jones on here not talking national politics because you are not a Johnny come lately to this issue. You started ringing the alarm bells the morning after the President of the United States won 4 years ago, and you've been on it, and day by day we have seen it deteriorate. We've seen his actions create true chaos in the nation. Now we've got examples that he knew about, the Russians putting bounties on the heads of American boys and girls fighting in Afghanistan. We see the European Union is about to basically put the United States on a no-fly list with Russia and Brazil, while other countries all around the nation are going to be spared. It appears to be a failure on every level. Give us your perspective, Julian, because I said you've been there since day one.
Don, thanks for giving me an opportunity. I tell you, there is no doubt about what I'm about to tell you. Donald Trump has been the biggest danger to this nation than anything that I can think of other than maybe a world war. I mean, Donald Trump, from the very beginning, you know, it was explained to me by a friend who was an intelligence agency before Donald Trump became elected. And I said, well, you know, you guys are so concerned? He said, we're extremely concerned. I said, well, why? You know, and he said, I said, what do you think, you're going to start a war or something? He says, no, we can fight wars and we can win wars. He said, our problem is, what is he going to do to our relationship with our friends around the world? We can't do what we do without friends. And everything he said has come true. If you look at the way Donald Trump has been treating, mistreating our friends, cozying up to our enemies, sowing division in this country, just making us weaker all around the world. And this isolationist and this the fact that other leaders are laughing at him. And, I mean, this guy is just a danger to our nation. And believe me when I tell you, when you slap your one of our friends in the face and mistreat him or don't follow through on promises that we've made for years, what do you expect them to do? They are quietly, as it may, going around making other arrangements with other people. Opening up the door for China, opening up the door for Russia, opening up the door for other alliances that will not include us moving forward in the world. Thanks a lot, Donald Trump, the biggest joke that I could think of.
Well, Julian, a year ago we said democracy is not a spectator sport, and I know from your background, you know, many, many years, not just activism, but also working as in the fire force, that to get involved in politics and for me to be doing sports for 30 years and roll my sleeves up, it really does come back to Donald Trump being involved, and we say elections have consequences, and Don writes that all the time, and we're going to be saying for the next 3-4 months here, vote in November like your life depends upon it, because it does, because when Donald Trump becomes president, it affects Liberty Road. It affects downtown where I live off Light Street. It affects Catonsville. It affects every part of everything we're doing here, especially as this pandemic has crippled all of us to some degree in our economy. And it really was the beginning of starting this whole thing. But activism on the local level in a census year and having voices to speak out and call a lie and a liar, right? That's been very, very difficult, I think, for the media to do. There are so many lies. It's Orwellian, is it not, Julian?
Yeah, I mean, it's so many you can't keep track. And, I was talking to a friend and I was telling him, you know, he came from the position of Donald Trump is funny and I like laughing at him. So I told him, I said, well, you know, it's all fun and games when he's saying crazy things and you think it's funny. It's all fun and games till a global pandemic shows up, till the coronavirus show up, and then you see the incompetence, the craziness that says, this is not a problem. Don't even wear a mask. Don't do this. Don't do that. I mean, there were people sounding the alarms before the virus hit our shores saying, are you sure you guys don't want to buy these masks? Because everybody in the world is asking for them. Are you sure? And we're saying no. So getting back to the point, politics is definitely local, and everybody needs to vote because, I was talking to a group. You need no more better example than right here in Baltimore County. Johnny Olszewski Jr. won the election by 18 votes. 18 votes out of 140,000 some people that were voting. 850,000 people in Baltimore County. 18 votes swayed the election. If you look at Congressman Kwesi Mfume, who just went back to Congress, you look at his entire political career. That started with an election in Baltimore City where he won by 3 votes. So believe me when I tell you, your vote matters. And it's important that you go out and vote because the fact of the matter is a lot of people did not vote in the last election. They did not vote, and, you know, you can see what happens.
Well, I want to pick up on that, Julian, because you truly, and it's not blowing smoke at you, you know that Southwest, Northwest portion of Baltimore County as well as anyone. You've been involved for many, many years, long before you became a council member. As you get around the district, share with our listeners, what's the sentiment on the ground now in communities regarding the November election? Are people engaged? Do you think people are going to come out? What's your read of the electorate as we're about 4 months out?
I see this electric, this vote being something that's so intent I see everybody really getting out the vote. I'm going to make a prediction that, especially in my community, but throughout this country, you're going to see bigger numbers than we saw for Obama. You're going to see big, big numbers come out and vote. Now, on the other hand, I have to be honest. There are some people on the other side who were very disappointed in all of our leaders. They've been hiding sort of under a rock, but Donald Trump has sounded the whistle and told them to come on out mainstream. It's okay. Your views of racism, bigotry, and all of these things are okay. Come on out and vote for me. So you're going to see some of those folks show up too. So I guess see this being a very, very polarized election, and I guess see everybody getting out to vote.
Well, Julian, as to your point about the dog whistle and making it okay, Nestor has been pointing out all morning that this, we're not making this up. If someone tuned in and they had been in a time capsule and they hear what I'm about to say, their reaction would be, well, that they must be satirical. They're not being serious. And that is that we had a president of the United States recently tweet out a video of a man in a golf cart screaming white power. That literally happened in the United States of America.
Yep. Yep.
It does leave us all speechless, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, you know, and especially exasperated after 3 3/4 years of this, right? Like, literally, other than a world war, every worst nightmare we can imagine, and how it does come home to Baltimore County. Julian Jones is here. He is in the fourth in Baltimore County. And, you know, we've talked about what this leads to and where George Floyd is and where the pandemic is and what America has become literally over the last 6 to 8 weeks here, and where we are in Baltimore County for police reform. And we want to give you some oxygen to talk about that, because we've done really nothing but talk about race over the last 4 or 5 weeks here at Baltimore Positive as something that I think lots of people were talking about it for many, many years before it became the nightly news every night, as it has been the last 2 months.
Well, let me say this. Let me just add one more a recap on the COVID issue. Now, in times of tragedy, in times of a national crisis, we have all rallied around one another, and the flag is popular. Everybody's flying the flag, and everybody rallies around, and it shows the best we have to offer in people. The best always comes out. Only Donald Trump can turn this into a mess. I mean, only he can turn around and all of a sudden you got people saying, I don't want to wear a mask because of my freedom. I don't think I should have to wear a mask. I mean, it's like, even a global pandemic, we can't all just can't stay together. Why? Because of people like Trump out there spreading hate and, you know, trying to do what he thinks he needs to do. I don't know how much of it is ignorance, how much of it is strategy. I don't think it's much strategy, so I guess I should stick with the ignorance.
Well, Julian, you've got a career in public safety, and we always start when we talk about difficult police issues to say that the overwhelming number of men and women who serve as police officers across this nation are good and decent people. But it seems to me that we've had to move to make a decision and a distinction that what we're talking about, when you see what's taking place across the country, has to be more than just one or two bad apples, as some folks would like to say, and there has to be something systemic going on. And I want you to talk about that, whether there's something systemic going on, and then I want you to talk about the legislation that you're going to be putting forth, and you're going to be making a public announcement at a rally during July. So sort of educate our listeners. Do we have a systemic racism problem as to how we police across the country? And then talk about your legislation.
Yes, I think we definitely have a systemic problem. And you're absolutely right. the vast majority of the men and women of the police departments across this nation, especially across Baltimore County, go to work every day and do a great job and work hard for the citizens. I had one officer who's a friend of mine told me, having watched the George Floyd video, he had to work that night, and he said he literally looked at his uniform for probably 5 to 10 minutes thinking about, do I feel like putting this uniform on and going to work tonight, or should I call in sick? Because I don't want anybody to associate me with what happened. But when what I think happened with George Floyd, we've gotten to a point where these officers felt perfectly comfortable killing a man in broad daylight while the looked on and videoed and begged them to stop and said, hey, I'm an EMT, check his pulse, he's unconscious. I mean, the man begging for his life, all of that speaks to a culture. All of that speaks to a culture that goes beyond just a couple of bad apples, because these bad apples are perfectly okay and comfortable operating with impunity, because our system has said, well, you know, we need the police, we love the police, therefore what you do is okay. And I think over the years of police training each other, constantly trying to become more and more safe for them, and they have drifted, in my opinion, off course. And I'll give you a couple of real quick examples. In the fire department, I was in the fire department for 32 years. I've signed up to put my life on the line to protect my community and members in the community. So when I pull up on the scene and the house is 50% involved and somebody says, my loved one is in that house, you know, we're going to go in and try to rescue the person. Even though the house is 50% involved in fire, even though we know it's just a matter of time before the roof collapse, we know that it's just a matter of time before the floor collapse. We know there's gas that can explode. We know there's flashover backdraft. We know all these dangers, electricity, all of this is in there that can harm or kill us, but we take that risk. But then it seems to me as though we've come to a place in policing in America where the police have been taught not to accept any risk. In other words, if you guys look like you could have a weapon in the eyes or the mind of the police officer, then it's okay for them to use deadly force on a person that have no weapon at all. And I mean, if you look at the shooting at I-83, you type as Baltimore County Police I-83, and you'll see what happened with Mr. Eric Sopp. This guy had no weapon. The only thing he did was get out of the car when the police told him not to. That should not have resulted in him being shot to death with no weapon at all. So that's where we are in America in terms of policing. You know, we talk about de-escalation techniques. I mean, I want real de-escalation, because in that case, I talked to many officers who told me, because the officer used the word please prior to shooting and killing the guy, then that was de-escalation. I said, well, that's a very mild case. In my world, the officer would have stayed on the other side of the car to make a better assessment, as opposed to going to the guy and then deciding he had to shoot. But anyway, getting back to the legislation that I have, the goal is to, number one, try to bring some forces into play in terms of a law that will require police officers, for the most part, to not inject violence in situations where there is no violence. Far too many times there is no violence taking place, yet the police inject violence because somebody didn't do what they told them to do. And I just think there has to be a better way. So anyway, it also talks about, I'll go through the list really, really fast. It's like 12 principles. One, it requires additional training. One on real de-escalation techniques and other things on inherent biases. Number two, it disqualifies a person who was forced to resign or retire from another police department or agency because of some type of misconduct or some proceedings. And then that will prohibit us from hiring that person. Number three, it defines and requires the use of the de-escalatory techniques before a police officer can use physical force. Again, we're talking about cases where you have a kid in Woodlawn sitting on a curb. He was a peacemaker during a fight, and the police decide they're going to arrest him. They pull his arm. He pull his arm. Next thing you know, another officer's on him, punching him in the face. That should have never happened. Defines and limits the use of physical force by a police officer. It prohibits the use of chokeholds or any type of neck asphyxiation technique by a police officer. It requires police officers to intervene and report when another officer uses unnecessary or excessive force. And then it provides whistleblower protection for any officer who intervenes or report an officer for use of unnecessary excessive force. Now, that part came as a result of other officers telling me, oh, by the way, councilman, you know, when other officers in the past have tried to intervene, the departments, for them, they fired a guy who says, enough is enough. Stop what you're doing. Oh, no, you didn't follow procedure. So that was important that we came up with some whistleblower protection for officers who do come forward. Of course, it requires officers to call for first aid. It requires the department to implement an early intervention system where they basically look at the uses of force. And if there's an officer that's standing out way above everybody else, then somebody needs to talk to that person and bring them in and find out what's going on. And let me see, it requires us to keep track of police-involved shootings and death. Right now, the Justice Department, they collect that information on a voluntary basis. If a department so choose to give them that information, great. You have the whole state of Florida giving no information at all. So it's going to require us to collect that information and share it with any state, federal database out there that wants it, whether it's voluntary or not. And last but certainly not, we're asking that the chief appoint two members of the public to the police hearing board.
We are chatting with Councilman
Julian. How the hearing board is constructed now, Julian, for folks who might not know.
Okay, so the hearing board right now is made up of, number one, this is spelled out in the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights down in Annapolis. So it's state law. There's a Law Enforcement Bill of Rights that spells out what the hearing board can look like. So it's not like the chief of Baltimore County Police or the county executive of Baltimore County can just come in and do what they want to do with these hearing boards. That's all lined up and codified in the state law with the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights. So the hearing board right now would be made up of like a major or a colonel in the police department. Then it would be made up of a person of the same rank, officer that's being accused of wrongdoing, so to speak. And then I'm trying to think. Let me make sure I get it right. Then I think there's another. It's like three or four people on the board. This, according to the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights, they can have public officials. They can have members of the public, but they have to provide them some training in police procedures so that member of the public would understand understand their policies and procedures. But that's the makeup of the board.
Saying there are no citizens on that board.
No citizens, just police officers.
Go ahead, Nathan.
I'm just resetting. Councilman Julian Jones is our guest of District 4 in Baltimore County. Go ahead, Don. I didn't want to interrupt. I just wanted to reset.
No, appreciate you doing that. Councilman Jones, we know you have a good relationship with County Executive Wyszewski, who's also moved forward to make some changes to make the department more transparent. We know that anytime legislation passes, it requires other council members to be on board. So a couple of questions. Are you in discussions with the administration about your legislation, and are you seeking co-sponsors of the legislation from other council members?
Number one, yes, I am in discussion with the administration. In fact, some of the bills, some of the things in this list was also will come out to be policy changes that the county executive is going to put into place. The important distinction here is a policy change is something he can do or the chief can do during their administration. What I'm doing is going to codify these things into law, and the only way they change is somebody changes the law, which is a public process like we're doing now. So, yes, I am working with the county executive, and we will have more discussions as we move forward. And it should be noted that, I mean, I've put this out there to the police union as well to say, hey, look it over. Let's talk about it. Tell me where you have issues with certain things. I believe the vast majority of the officers are okay with these proposals. That's been my experience.
We're going to break our rule again. I'm going to interrupt for a second because before you talk about other council members, I have always maintained, and Nestor, you've heard me say this over and over, that one of the shifts that would really benefit the officer on the street is that day and time when the Fraternal Order of Police begin to work on these issues with elected officials and with the communities. And I'm convinced that when they step forward and say, look, we've got to be part of reforming this as well, it makes their officers safer. Are you hearing some of that now coming from the FOP?
I can't agree more with what you said. One of the things that I've been pushing is, I was very proud when I saw in the news where three of the largest police unions in California took out full-page ads in the Washington Post, the New York Times, and several other papers around the country saying, number one, we don't want racist police working with us, and number two, we're okay with reforms, and here's a list of reforms that we think we should start with. So to me, that just shows that, okay, they want to be a part of the conversation. And I'm hopeful based on the words of the police, the FOP president, Dave Rose, I am hopeful that they will be a part of the conversation and will be helpful in terms of bringing about the change. The problem is not to make it local on the FOP in Baltimore County, but, you know, these unions, they have a mission, which is to protect their officers. That's what they're there for. That's who pay the dues. That's who run them. So their job is to do what's best in terms of protecting the jobs of their officers. And they have a duty to represent an officer who gets in trouble. Regardless of what the officer did, that officer paid dues for representation, and they get it. So, number one, I understand where they're coming from, and I understand the limits that may be placed on them because of who they represent. But one of the things that I said, and I really believe, if you look in this last month, how many officers that have been charged with crimes, how many have been fired on the spot, I mean, the country is saying enough is enough. We're not just going to turn a blind eye on misbehavior. So I think that these reforms are wanted and needed and is in the best interest of the officer as well as the public.
Don, you know, we go revisionist here back to episode 232 with DeRay McKesson and talking about the 8 Can't Wait mission and chokeholds and all of these things. All of the smartest people have said this is a local issue, this is a mayor or a CE issue, and then it's probably a councilman issue to say we gotta change laws around here, right? And I guess this, Don, this is what we're seeing right now with what Councilman Jones is doing, right?
Absolutely, and that's why I ask Julian, what kind of response have you gotten from other council members? Because I think Nestor's right. It's got to be about the law.
Well, I've talked to a few of the council members, And I think a lot of them, you know, none of them have signed on to co-sponsor the bill, but to be fair to them, the bill hasn't been introduced. They all have a copy of the draft. It'll be introduced next Monday, July 6th. So then I'm hopeful that, you know, a couple of them or all of them would sign on. You know, I might be a little naive to think all, but it's certainly my goal to get them all to sign on as co-sponsors and at a minimum vote for the bill.
Well, we
appreciate the visit. And I would encourage everybody that once the bill, when you're listening to this, sometime in July, you can go find out more information on the bill. All the bills that are introduced in Baltimore County are available on the Baltimore County website. Can't be any easier. It's just Baltimore County Government. Go find it. Click on County Council and look at legislation. You will be able to read the legislation and find out what the councilman's trying to do to make Baltimore County safer for its communities and for its police officers. So, Julian, I appreciate you coming on. Nestor, do you have anything else for the council?
No, next time we'll talk about putting out fires for 32 years because we just sort of skipped over all that, didn't we?
Well, you know, I have a good story I have to tell people about putting out fires, right? Working in the fire department has prepared me very well for this job that I do today. Both of them have a big public service component where you're working for the citizens. In the fire department as a chief, I went from emergency to emergency putting out fires. And unfortunately, in the fire department, people died. But that was sort of like the way the business goes, right? Here, and as a councilman, I go from place to place. Everybody tells me of all these emergencies and how they're going to die if they don't get what they want. But at the end of the day, they still around tomorrow to ask for something else if they don't get what they want.
Well, the toughest job you've ever had is PTA President Herman Elementary, right? There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah. That was a tough job. You know, listen, even with the politics, right? In the fire department, I achieved a certain rank after 32 years where, you know, most people in that organization was under me in rank. So, of course, I treated everybody with respect and kindness and always asked them to do things for me. But at the end of the day, I had the authority to say, do it. And they did it. Man, when you're talking about a PTA president or you're talking about here in the world of politics, you don't have any real hammers over people. You have to convince, cajole, and explain to them why, you know, what you're doing and why you want them to do certain things is good for people. So it's a little challenging. But I enjoy it.
Sometimes
enjoy
we can herd cats, though. We hope to do that here in America and bring everybody together in November, right?
Julian Jones is one of the real good guys in politics and elected office. I can say, Julian, I appreciated our working relationship, and you always put your constituents first. So I hope you'll become a regular visitor to Baltimore Positive. Really appreciate you coming on.
Well, listen, Don, it goes without saying, the amount of respect and admiration I have for you and the things that you've done in terms of serving the citizens and being a mentor to me. I mean, you give me some good advice over the years. So I certainly appreciate everything you're doing. Aparicio, you're a great guy from what I can tell. You're doing the great things here in Baltimore County, and I really appreciate you guys giving me an opportunity to come on.
Man, you get Don all buttery on that mentor stuff. He was my high school guidance counselor in 1982, so, you know.
I'm telling you, he's been around, hasn't he?
Absolutely,
yeah,
man.
An old guy.
We've all learned from
Don. Take us out of here.
Councilman Julian Jones over in the 4th in Baltimore County, former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, of course. All of our WNST coverage brought to you by our friends at Taharka Ice Cream. I got rid of the vanilla bean. Some people say, well, vanilla, you know, how good can vanilla ice cream be? Well, the sweet vanilla cream ice cream with flecks of vanilla beans. Highly recommend this. I put a little pineapple in there and a little macadamia. Nut too, fixed it all up. Taharka Brothers, awaken more than just your taste buds. And of course, just like me and Don Moeller and Julian Jones, made here in Baltimore. Don't forget our friends at State Fair over in Catonsville. Get some shrimp and grits and get over to El Guapo for some guacamole. And I'm going to have myself a margarita. I'm going to see if we can work a Tommy's margarita onto the menu over there with Evan. We're going to talk to Evan this week. We're also going to talk to Damian Hahn, two of our original Baltimore sponsors, or Baltimore Positive sponsors. Of course, Fade These crab cakes can be shipped anywhere in the world. You can get down to Lexington Market. We're going to be talking about the state of the crabbing industry and where crabs come from and how they're picked, the Eastern Shore, the Western Shore. My wife and I drove across the Tunnel Bridge and through the whole Eastern Shore of Virginia and Chincoteague and up through Snow Hill and into Salisbury last week. We talked about crabs in Chrisfield. So we're going to do that with Damie Hahn this week from Fadley's. And last but never least, Mueller & Gary Realty still getting it done out there on the internet from 6 feet away. Don Mueller's boy Jeff's going to be a guest here before summer's over with. I'm going to have his daughter on talking about things over at the elementary school in Catonsville as well. You can find Mueller & Gary Realty at MuellerAndGary.com as well as 410-489-2621. We'll get you in touch with Jeff Mueller. Nasty at WNST.net finds me Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Instagram, and anywhere. WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're keeping calm, we're staying local, and we're always Baltimore positive.